All right, so we're going to be starting off in Genesis 29 this morning, picking back up in Genesis chapter 29. So, as many of you know, we've been just working through the Bible, line by line, verse by verse, chapter by chapter. So, we've left off right at the end of chapter 28 last week. And we saw Jacob on his journey to try to find a wife. He's kind of mirroring what we saw Isaac go through. And in chapter 28, we saw him, he had a dream of what everyone knows as Jacob's ladder. He saw the ladder to heaven with the angels going up and down on it. And we just want to remember that that's symbolic of Christ. That's what it's showing us. Our way to heaven is Christ. That's what that ladder was to represent, was Jesus. So Jacob's on his journey to try to find a wife, and we've seen him stop over, and now he's going to continue on that journey. So Genesis chapter 29, and we're at verse 1. So Genesis 29, verse 1. Then Jacob went on his journey and came into the land of the people of the east. Okay, now this seems to be a very simple verse here, right? He's going on his journey, he's going to the land of the people of the east. But we've talked a lot about the different literary devices in the Bible, the different phrases that are used. And so I wanted to touch on something here because it may help us as we get deeper in the Bible and get to more complicated chapters. So when we see there it says, then Jacob went on his journey. If they had just translated that straight from the Hebrew, that actually would have said the Hebrew idiom used there is that Jacob lifted up his feet. So if it was just a straight translation, it would say, then Jacob lifted up his feet and came into the land of the people of the east. When I think about what that might would make us see in our minds, that, okay, he lifted up his feet. All of a sudden, he's lifted off the ground and he's floating across the Jordan River. And no, it just means he's walking. He's on a journey. So this one's pretty simple to understand, but I want us to get in the habit of understanding these phrases so when we get to complicated books like Proverbs and Daniel and Revelation, that we know how to take these tools and use them when we get to those parts. Now, where it says that he goes to the people of the east here, that's a Hebrew word that's kedim. It's used for just a generic designation for the location east of Canaan. So it's beyond the border of the Jordan River. So this doesn't tell us a specific place or a specific people. We have to study the verses around it, the whole chapter, to understand where he's going. So again, just one of those tools we can use as we get into more complicated verses. So Genesis chapter 29, verse 2 here. And he looked, and behold, a well in the field. And lo, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it. For out of that well they watered the flocks, and a great stone was upon the well's mouth. Now we talked about this Thursday at Bible study, right? That there are certain words. It's a literary device called asterismos. That is just a complicated word to say, this word is pointing you to something important. Now, we talked on Thursday, there's two in here. Christopher and John, do y'all see the two that are there? Behold and lo, right? So that word behold, a well in the field. It's always the next thing after the word. Behold, a well. So the well's important. And then lo, there were three flocks of sheep. The flocks of sheep are important. So this is pointing us to something being important here. Now, wells are important because in that area, water is very precious. They have to have water, and it's not plentiful. So that's why it's pointing us to the well being important. But we also know that Isaac met his wife at a well. We're going to see that reflected in Jacob here as well. But then why are the three flocks of sheep important? So what would happen here is this well in particular, they're gathering all of the flocks together, and they will water all of the flocks at one time. Because water was so precious to them, they wanted to have everyone there to water their flocks at the same time to keep everything fair. So we're going to see that kind of repeated as we go further in this chapter. So verse 3. And thither were all the flocks gathered, and they rolled the stone from the well's mouth, and watered the sheep, and put the stone again upon the well's mouth in its place. Now in the King James, when we read this, it sounds like they're actually giving water to the sheep here. If you're reading in like an NIV, it may read a little different, and you'll actually get a better representation of this verse. They are not watering the sheep in this verse. This is just telling us this is how they would do things. And that will make sense because when we get a few verses down, we're going to see Jacob water the sheep. So why would he give water to the flocks if they've already done it? This is just telling us this is the normal order of events here. That they would gather the flocks, and then they would all water the flocks from that well together. So verse 4. And Jacob said unto them, my brethren, whence be ye? And they said, of Haran are we. So he's asking, where am I? Who are you guys? And they tell him, you're in Haran. You've made it. Now, Zach had a map that he used last week. I'm going to bring this map back up. So we'll see it here on the slide. Now, it's kind of hard to see. But about there, right down here at the bottom is where he left off in chapter 28 last week. Now you see this line goes all the way up to the top, and that top point is Haran. So we see how much further he's traveled now. This was a journey of around 400 miles. So Jacob didn't just go across town looking for a wife. When he was told to leave Canaan so that way he could find a wife of the righteous bloodline, he made a journey of 400 miles to make sure he was getting away from that corrupted bloodline of the Canaanites that had mixed with the Rephaim and the Nephilim. So I just wanted to show that, to show how far Jacob was willing to go to follow God's plan for him and what the family had in store, and follow what Isaac and Rebekah wanted from him. Because remember, Esau took wives of the Canaanites, and it said that that broke his mother and father's heart. He wasn't supposed to do that. So Jacob's doing the right thing here. So then back to verse 5 here in chapter 29. And he said unto them, Know ye Laban the son of Nahor? And they said, We know him. Okay, so we've hit on this a couple times. We talked about it on Mother's Day, how I think that sometimes this is better that they only had a few words for family. But this word son here, Laban was not the son of Nahor. He was the grandson of Nahor. In Hebrew, they didn't have words for grandson and nephew and great-grandson and all these things. They just used a few different words. And it's another literary device that's used as taking a part to represent the whole. Son being used for all male descendants. If you're a male descendant, you're a son. Whether you're a grandson, great-grandson, whatever, it doesn't matter. So we'll take a look at the family tree in just a minute, so that way we know we're not missing anything. But names also mean something. Laban here means white, glorious, the root meaning to be white or to be clean. Now, what's the significance of that? The significance is that he's found Laban, and this is how he knows that he's in the right place and he's got the righteous bloodline. He's found his kinsman and who he should marry to. That way, the bloodline stays pure for Christ to come through. Because remember, that's what why we study all of this, is this is all for the bloodline that Jesus would come through, and it had to be pure. It could not be mixed with the fallen angels. So that's why that name, meaning to be clean, signifies something there. Now, this next slide, this is going to be a little hard to show, but I can give this to anybody that wants to look over. But I just wanted to show that we have these family trees that show the generations, and we can see that Laban was not the son. He's the grandson. They skipped over Bethuel. So we actually have this laid out if anybody needs to look at it, if it would help you. To me, I can read the verses where it says so-and-so begot so-and-so begot so-and-so, and it is just mud in my mind. But I can look at this, and it's clear. So having that visual representation helps me. So if anybody needs that, just let Zachariah know. We can get that to you. So now back to verse 6. And he said unto them, Is he well? This is Jacob asking about Laban. So saying, Is he well? And they said, He is well. And behold, Rachel his daughter cometh with the sheep. Again, that word behold being used for emphasis. And behold, Rachel. Rachel's important. That's what that word's pointing to there. So he's just asking, how's Laban? They say, oh, he's doing well. Actually, that's his daughter coming right there. Verse 7. And he said, Lo. That word lo, again, pointing emphasis. It is yet high day. So it's around midday. So it's important that we know what time of the day this is. Neither is it time that the cattle should be gathered together. Water ye the sheep and go and feed them. So it's the middle of the day here, and he's saying, we'll find as we go further and further that Jacob's a pretty good herdsman. And he's saying, why do you have all the sheep here at the well? They should be out in the pastures. They should be out grazing. Why are you all gathered here? Well, again, we know they're waiting to water the sheep. So they're wasting a little bit of time here that they shouldn't be. But I think Jacob may be wanting a little bit of privacy with Rachel as well. He knows he's supposed to marry from this bloodline. And they just said, hey, here comes the daughter of your uncle, the bloodline he's supposed to marry to. And we're going to see he's pretty smitten with Rachel right out the gate. So verse 8. And they said, we cannot until all the flocks be gathered together, until they roll the stone from the well's mouth, then we water the sheep. So this is why that verse earlier was not them watering the sheep, just telling us how they would go about doing it. Because we see here, they haven't watered them yet. And they wait to water all of the herds together, that way everything's kept fair. They're not going to accuse each other, there's not going to be corruption, they're not going to say, oh, this shepherd took more water than we got, they're all doing it together. It avoids any complications there. So verse 9, and while he yet spake with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she kept the sheep. So during this time, if you had someone that owned herds of cattle or sheep, if they were wealthy, they would have had servants to do this. If they don't have servants, they would use their youngest son or daughter. David, that becomes King David, is a great example of this. He was Jesse's youngest son. He's the shepherd. So this kind of tells us that Laban's not a, a super rich person. That's why his daughter is the shepherd or shepherdess over his sheep. He doesn't have a servant to do it. Verse 10. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Now note that this keeps saying that Laban is his mother's brother. It's his uncle. Because we're going to see in a moment it's going to call him his brother. But we know this lays out plainly it's his uncle. So we see Jacob kind of jump into action. He rolls the stone away and he's wanting to water the sheep. So he's probably trying to make a good first impression on Rachel. He's wanting to like show off to her a little. Verse 11. And Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. Now the kiss there, that is not a romantic kiss. That is just a greeting of the time. So don't think that they jumped and skipped several steps here. We're going to see him kiss his uncle in just a minute. It's not romantic, okay? So verse 12. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's brother and that he was Rebekah's son, and she ran and told her father. Again, he's not Laban's brother. He's his nephew. We just saw that in verse 10. But it's that same literary device that we've seen time and time again. In the Hebrew, they don't have words for these distinctions. So verse 13. And it came to pass, when Laban heard the tidings of Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him. Okay, there he's kissing his uncle. And brought him to his house, and he told Laban all these things. So Jacob's explaining to Laban the journey he's been on. He's come 400 miles. He's kind of catching him up and letting him know, I'm here to find a wife. That's the whole purpose of why I'm here. Verse 14. And Laban said to him, surely thou art my bone and my flesh. And he abode with him the space of a month. Okay, so it telling us that he's been with him for a month is important here. So during this time with these people, the way that the custom was set up was that not even just a family member, a stranger, could come to you and you would entertain them for 3 days. No questions asked, you'd take them in and that'd be fine. But now if he stays a fourth day, he's expected to tell you his purpose. He's not just there on vacation hanging out. There's a reason why you're here if you stay more than that third day and you're there on the fourth. Then if he prolongs his stay further than that, past that fourth day, he's got to set his hand to work in some way. So he's got to be doing work. So once he's doing that work, we're also going to see that there has to be wages that are set. So you're not going to work for free. You're expected to do work, but you're going to be paid for it. So verse 15. And Laban said unto Jacob, because thou art my brother, again, nephew, not brother, shouldest thou serve me for naught? Tell me, what shall thy wages be? So the uncle is asking here, what should I pay you? You're not going to work for free for me. Now, you've been here more than 4 days. You have to work, but what do I need to pay you here? Verse 16. And Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. So we see he has two daughters there, an older Leah and the younger Rachel. Verse 17. Leah was tender-eyed, but Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. Now that tender-eyed there, that can be translated weak-eyed. It probably means blue-eyed. So it's probably meaning that she had a blue eye, and we know from the science now it's a recessive gene, which is probably why they call it tender or weak-eyed. It's a recessive gene. Everyone else probably were brown-eyed at that point, but she's got blue eyes. Now again, we said the names mean something here. Leah means weary or tired. That's what her name translates to. Now that's going to foreshadow what's about to happen with Jacob. Keep in mind, her name means weary or tired, and we're going to apply that to Jacob and the work he's going to have to do. But then Rachel... Rachel means a sheep, or the word, or the root of that really meaning to cherish, showing that she's going to be Jacob's favorite. That's who Jacob wants, is Rachel. Verse 18. And Jacob loved Rachel and said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. So he's saying, I'll do 7 years of work to secure Rachel's hand. 19. And Laban said, it is better that I give her to thee than that I should give her to another man. Abide with me. So saying, it's better for her to marry someone from my own bloodline than to marry a random person. So it would be better for her to marry you, Jacob. Verse 20. And Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed unto him but a few days for the love he had to her. So that shows how strong his feelings were towards Rachel, that he worked 7 years, but it says it was just like a few days to him. But I want us to take a look back. We're going to go back to Genesis 27:44. You don't have to turn there. I've got the verse here. But look at what this says. This was Rebekah talking to Jacob after Esau got upset that his inheritance was given to Jacob. So it says, "And tarry with them a few days until thy brother's fury turns away." So Rebekah had planned to send Jacob away for just a little while. Just a few days, go away until Esau's calmed down some. And now it's been 7 years. So just keep that in mind, you guys. When y'all are told to be home at like 10, 11 o'clock, the Bible says you can be a little bit late, right? It's okay to break curfew just a little bit. Don't tell your mama I said that. Okay, and then in Hosea 12:12, we see that Jacob's servitude is referenced to what he did for Rachel here. So Jacob fled into the country of Syria, and Israel served for a wife, and for a wife he kept sheep. So in Hosea, this is going to be referenced back to here. So just keep in mind that these admits are important. This is building the foundation of blocks we're going to need all the way through the Bible. So back to Genesis 29, verse 21 here. "And Jacob said unto Laban, Give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go in unto her." So he says, "Give me my wife." So this is consistent with their cultural views then in the Near East, that once a woman was betrothed, she would be called a wife. We have, again, we talk about the different words that they use for family, that we have more distinctions now. Now we say fiance. They would have just said wife then, even if the marriage hasn't occurred. So she's his wife, even though they haven't gone through the marriage ceremony yet. So that's part of what is called the Code of Hammurabi. We talked about that several chapters ago, and it's something that keeps coming up because it was kind of the laws they lived by. Now, at the end of that verse, "that I may go in unto her," depending on the translation you're reading, you'll probably see what that really means there. That means to go in and to be intimate. So that means they're wanting to lay together as man and wife. So that's showing you Jacob has waited 7 years. He's probably a little impatient waiting on this now, right? So he's telling Laban, "Hey, I've completed my 7 years. It's time." So I've got a verse here from Deuteronomy. This is chapter 20, verse 7. That this is referring to that code of Hammurabi that showed us that a wife would be called a wife even before the ceremony. "And what man is there that hath betrothed a wife and hath not taken her? Let him go and return unto his house, lest he die in the battle and another man take her." So I just wanted to look at that verse to show that they're called a wife even if the wedding has not taken place yet. So Genesis 29, verse 22 here. "And Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast." So now they're about to have the wedding ceremony. They're actually going to have the marriage happen, and we're going to see that he's gathered a little bit of wealth, and more than likely that's because of Jacob working for him and the blessings of God coming through. Verse 23, "And it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah his daughter and brought her to him and went in unto her." So we should notice something really quickly there. He's worked 7 years for Rachel, but then they're having the feast, they're having the wedding, they're all drinking wine. And instead of getting Rachel, he gets Leah. And it says he went in unto her, that's that same phrase, to be intimate with. So now he has consummated this marriage with Leah. Now, Zach talked about what happened with Jacob and Esau and the transfer of the inheritance. This is almost a mirror of that, just flip-flopped. We had, when Esau was the oldest and was supposed to get the inheritance, Jacob went in disguised to take it. Well, now, instead of the younger being the one that gets married, we're seeing the older go in wearing the wedding veil so she couldn't be recognized and being deceiving to where now he's married the wrong woman. So this is a direct mirror of what's happened with Jacob and Esau. Verse 24. "And Laban gave unto his daughter Leah Zilpah his maid for an handmaid." So giving the bride a servant was, again, a custom back then. You'll see it in all Mesopotamian literature as part of the Code of Hammurabi. Now, the reason that they did this was the man controlled all the servants. That was just part of the role. But the handmaiden that was given to the bride from her family was her servant. That handmaid didn't answer to the husband. The handmaid answered to the wife. So this was directly her servant. Verse 25. "And it came to pass that in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, What is this thou hast done unto me? Did I not serve with thee for Rachel? Wherefore then hast thou beguiled me?" So again, that word behold, pointing us to something important. Behold, it's Leah. So if you didn't catch it from the earlier verses, catch it now. This was not Rachel sent to him, it was Leah. So he's been given the wrong woman, And again, they went in and were intimate together. The wedding is consummated. It's done. This is his wife now. So verse 26, this is Laban's excuse for why this happened. And Laban said, it must not be so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. So he's saying, the tradition says I can't give you Rachel till Leah is married. So he's kind of pointing the finger to Jacob and saying, you don't have a right to be angry. You should have known this is the custom. This had to go this way. So he's being very deceiving here. He took advantage of Jacob and is falling back and kind of hiding behind the customs of the time. Verse 27, fulfill her week, and we will give thee this also for the service which thou shalt serve with me yet 7 other years. So this is saying complete the 7-year marriage, the 7-day marriage celebration. So that way Leah gets her complete wedding here. And then I'll give you Rachel to be your wife. Now he's not going to make Jacob wait the extra 7 years. He's saying you can go ahead and have her as your wife, but then you owe me the 7 years of work here. So this is why it was important to know that Leah's name means weary or tired. Because Jacob is going to have to work double the amount of time he thought he was going to get Rachel. Instead of 7 years, he's going to have to work 14. So Leah's name being weary or tired, again, foreshadowed that this was going to happen. Verse 28. And Jacob did so and fulfilled her week, and he gave him Rachel, his daughter, to wife also. So again, he's taking Rachel here, and it's a popular mistake to think that he doesn't get Rachel till 7 years later. But he gets Rachel as his wife now. The reason that that mistake is made is because we're going to see the sons, the 12 that will end up being the patriarchs of the tribes of Israel, starting to be born. And Rachel doesn't have her first until 7 years in. So that's where that mistake comes in. But we'll see a verse that explains why she didn't have children in those first 7 years in just a moment. So verse 29. And Laban gave to Rachel his daughter, Bilhah, his handmaid to be her maid. So again, just the same thing we saw with Leah a moment ago. This is her direct servant that Laban's giving to her. Verse 30. And he went in also to Rachel, and he loved also Rachel more than Leah, and served with him yet 7 other years. So that verse there should tell us he didn't wait till the end of the 7 years, because it says he went in also unto Rachel. Again, that phrase means to lie with as a wife, to be intimate with. And that wouldn't have happened without them already being married. So that tells us he didn't wait the 7 years. He's paying the 7 years after he's gotten a wife. Verse 31. And when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. So this lets us know why Rachel didn't have children in those first 7 years. She will have children, but not until that 7 years is paid. And this is why. And now that word hated probably would be better translated as unloved. Jacob doesn't have ill will towards Leah. He doesn't hate her. He just loves Rachel more than her. So don't think that he was just like a terrible husband to Leah or anything like that. He just loved Rachel more. But again, he didn't choose to do this. This was kind of Laban's deception that put him in the situation. Verse 32. And Leah conceived and bare a son, and she called his name Reuben. For she said, surely the Lord hath looked upon my affliction. Now therefore my husband will love me. So she's saying, I've had a son now. Surely Jacob's going to love me. And we talk about names again. Reuben there means behold, a son, vision of the son. So she's saying, behold, I have a son. He's going to love me now. So let's name him Reuben. In verse 33. And she conceived again and bare a son and said, because the Lord hath heard that I was hated, again, unloved, he hath therefore given me this son also. And she called his name Simeon. Now, Simeon means hearkening, hearing with acceptance. Hears and obeys, an obeyer, hearing. So she said, the Lord heard that I was unloved. That's why he is called hearing. Verse 34. And she conceived again and bare a son and said, now this time will my husband be joined unto me because I have borne him 3 sons. Therefore his name was called Levi. So she's saying, I've had 3 sons. Surely he's going to come into me and join to me now. He's going to love me. Levi's name means adhesion, joined, to be joined, to cleave to. Now, Levi is important. This is the first of the tribes through which Christ will come. Christ has the bloodline of Levi because, as we'll document as we go further in the Bible, all of the priests were to be from this tribe, the Levitical priesthood. So this is how Christ has the legal distinction of high priest. He is from the bloodline of the priest, the tribe of Levi. Verse 35. And she conceived again and bare a son, and she said, now will I praise the Lord. Therefore she called his name Judah and left bearing. Left bearing there means that she's going to stop having children, but this is not permanent. We'll see her have more children. It's just she's not going to have any children for a while. We'll see more of the patriarchs come from some of the handmaids and from Rachel herself. But now Judah, she says, praise the Lord, and then called this son Judah. His name means praised. The Lord be praised, object of praise. Now, this is the other tribe through which Christ will come. This is the king line. This is where David, King David, this is his bloodline. So this is how we establish Christ as King of Kings. So through Levi, he is the high priest. Through Judah, he is the king. That is the two bloodlines. So there can be no ifs, ands, or buts about who Christ is. Not only is he destined to be that through God, he literally has the bloodlines to be those two things as well. So what I want us to think about from this chapter is we've seen Jacob work 14 years, double what he should have for the hand of Rachel. He had perseverance because of his love and hope for her. And we can apply that to ourselves when we have challenges and things that we have to go through that we just have to kind of persist. We'll go through hard times, but we'll get through it. And we have to trust in God and his plan for us, though. He will help us get through the hard work. And we see here he actually ends up giving Jacob two wives. He went on a journey just to get one. But there's a bigger thing that we have to see here. We have to be willing to let go of our plans. Because as we just saw, Jacob wanted Rachel. But the two bloodlines through which Christ would come is through Leah, the wife he didn't want. That's where the plan was. And so I just want us to take from this that there are times that we just need to stop and surrender to God. We have to be okay with turning over control, let go of the reins, and realize that our plans a lot of times are not the best. We can let go of that and know that he has what's best for us in his heart and mind, and will set that plan before us. And that's one of the things I struggle with most, is not wanting to let go of that control. But if we will just surrender to God, God's plan for us is better than the plans that we'll have for ourselves.